Okay, we are back at the Antlers, a Monday night, rainy Monday night in Sault Ste. Marie, but it is up over 50 degrees, and it's December the 14th. So weather-wise, I guess we could do without the rain, but the temperature is rather nice. And moving in with us now is Damon Whitten in the second portion of our program tonight, and the head coach of the Lakers joins us every week on this program. And we talked to Rich about this a little bit. We'll give you a shot at maybe saying a few words about the first half of the season. 4-4-4 at the break. Probably could be a little bit better, but it could be worse too, and it certainly was in the past. And I think it's pretty good right now. We had a good weekend, I think, against Michigan Tech, and we'll talk about that one too. But your assessment of the first half of this year?
Well, I think, like I said, you know, we're not happy or content with where we're at, but there's certainly been some bright spots, and there were some low spots for sure. So I think the growth from the first 3 or 4 weeks till now has been pretty remarkable, and you know, a lot of different things contribute to that in terms of us getting to learn our team, chemistry, line pairings, guys to use on special teams. So we've learned a lot about this team in a short order. And again, I think there's been tremendous growth. And when you look at the last 5-game segment being 3-1-1, the last 8 games, I think it's 4-2-2. And in the last 12, 4-4-4, you know, we've played our best hockey as of late. Obviously the home ice thing continues to be a little bit of a thorn there. And then we want to be better in that area. But there's been some good things, you know, up until Saturday night's penalty kill. The penalty kill has been tremendous. The power play is almost, you know, twice as effective as last year. You know, goaltending beyond those first couple of weeks have been tremendous. So I think there's been a lot of bright spots. Again, we're not happy with where we're at overall, but we're in a much better spot, obviously. And we've really put ourselves in a good position for the second half to make some ground up and then finish strong.
Yeah, you take that, and we talked to Rich about this too, that first to 7 minutes Saturday night out of the equation on the weekend. It was dead even all weekend.
Well, it's funny. Before the game, Rick Conley, some of you may have saw Rick at the game, Coach Conley at the game on Saturday night. And the night before, he was down at the Western Michigan game. I think they had Colorado College, and Western won big. I don't know, it's 5-1 or 6-3 or something like that. So it was a big score. And Coach, you know, it's funny, you just said, you know, that wasn't the score. Like, you know, anything Western put at the net, it went in. And so it wasn't a big score game like that. And I felt the same way about our game. You know, anything Tech put to the net early went in the net. Rich kind of talked about that first goal. That's the one that really got me. A minute 12 in, we had a player that wasn't ready to play, and it just set you back on your heels. And now you're trying to recover that early in the game. And that's not acceptable. We have to have everybody ready to play. So I thought that really hurt us, but then you just got some wristers from the blue line. You know, Gage Terrell got a really good shot block on one of Patan's shot. It hit off his hand and just kind of trickled in. And so it was one of those games where it ends up in the back of your net. I think, you know, give up 6 on 20 shots or whatever they had total is not indicative of our team. And so you got to wipe it a little bit, but certainly frustrating. There's an opportunity at home to close out strong. And I think, you know, to have that great 8 or 12 game segment, you know, the last 8 games being 4-2-2, to lose that one in that fashion takes a little bit of you know, all those positive things we had going for us and the confidence, and it's a little bit of a setback, but we'll be fine. The teams have a couple days off here to worry about finals and then freshen up. It's been a long first half, and then we're hard to work, and we've got big plans to go into Vermont and win a tournament.
Yeah, we do go to Vermont on the 29th and 30th of the month of December. We got a number of questions from fans here tonight. We'll get into those in a moment. But one of them is, are those games going to be broadcast? Well, we're trying to take care of that. Pat and I would like to get out there, but there are some logistical problems here with the team not being really here and us being able to get there. So we'll figure that out, though. And yes, we will broadcast both those games from out in Vermont. The first game is a night game. I believe it's 7 o'clock against Vermont, the host team in the Catamount Cup. And then the second game is 4 o'clock in the afternoon against Brown University. And I've been watching scores this first half, and Brown's coming on too. That's a team that's played better and better and better as the season's worn on. And Vermont's always tough at home, so that'll be a challenge.
Well, you know, we don't know a ton about those teams. We don't see them a whole lot. Ned was spending some time on the Brown game film today, so Ned's working on a game plan to make sure we're ready to play as we get out there. You know, we will. We've already exchanged film with Brown. We'll get Vermont in the next day or two, and then both assistant coaches will take one team and you know, get a good game plan in action. But we've got to learn about about that team. You know, there's been some challenges for both of them. I know Vermont just lost their starting goalie, and then they go and get a 4-0 shutout win with their backup goalie, who I'm not sure played any minutes this year. So, you know, we'll learn about them a little bit more. And sometimes when you play those Eastern teams, if they don't do a heavy BC recruiting, if they're mostly Eastern based, you don't have a real good feel for their personnel. And that's a little bit of the case. You know, a little bit more of the Vermont players and the Brown players, but they're good teams. And in college hockey, you know, any given night, you got to be ready to play. And, you know, we'll certainly use our experience from Florida last year, winning that championship off a break to try to build off of and make sure we're ready to play.
Yeah, it always is tough, too. These guys are going to go home. This is finals week at Lake Superior State. And at the end of this week, all our players, like most of our students, are going to head for home for the holiday. Our players, though, have got to be in Toronto, ready to get on a bus for Burlington, Vermont, and go to a practice at St. Mike's there on the 27th. So how do you work this all out? How do you get everybody back together again and ready to go?
Well, logistically, it is. It's not the easiest thing in the world. And I was involved, fortunately, in a lot of GLIs, and it was a little bit easier because we were always in Detroit, you know, with Florida last year, Vermont this year. It's starting to learn you don't want to do holiday tournaments. So it's difficult, but we're going to practice the 26th. So Boxing Day up in Toronto. You know, and we kind of picked Toronto because the British Columbia kids or any Canadians, instead of an international flight mixed in there, they can fly from their home base to Toronto, and we'll either have a bus pick them up or some of their teammates pick them up. If you're an American-based kid, we're going to have a bus leaving from the Detroit area on the 26th of the afternoon. So our American-based kids or people driving from the Midwest will meet in Detroit. So we'll have a bus leave from there, go to Toronto. We'll practice that night at St. Mike's. I played my junior hockey up there, so know some people up there. Austin McKay knows the area and played there as well. So it's a good home base there. And then we're kind of looking the next leg, the 27th. We've got three or four options for where we're going to practice. I think we all kind of feel the same way. We'd like to drive almost as far as we can. And then when you get back on the bus after practice, it's only an hour or two, not a 4 or 5 hours more. And then it makes it feel like such a long trip. So we're finalizing some of the logistics of that trip, but it should be good there. We got ice on the 28th in the afternoon up there, then a pregame skate on the first day of the game, the 4 o'clock game on, I want to say Saturday, but it's not Saturday, the second night there. We won't do a pregame skate because the ice is like 8:30 a.m. so we'll let our guys get some rest and sleep in. And again, a lot like Florida, you know, we'll go down and it's just a short thing. And holiday hockey is not always the prettiest hockey, but it's about playing and competing and being ready to go.
Yeah, and then a long drive all the way from Burlington back to Sault Ste. Marie after that.
Yeah, and again, that'll be we have some off days there with the midweek games. The guys will have 3 or 4 days off. Some guys have plans of departing right from there. Some of the kids more in that area will leave from there. A lot of the kids will come back on the bus in Toronto, disperse from there. Then a group of guys will come back to Detroit, disperse from there a little bit. So guys will have a chance to kind of hang out with some teammates in Toronto or Detroit. You know, hopefully enjoy a good weekend of hockey there, a good couple days of hockey, and then they're back up here for our homestand.
Okay, we've got to get into some of these questions from the fans here tonight. One of them right at the top, please explain the recent league policy concerning coaches shaking hands after game one of a two-game series.
Feedback there, but yeah, you know, we wanted to clarify it the other day. I think some people made, like, there's a big beef between me and Mel or Austin Michigan Tech, and we've got a great relationship, so there's no issue at all. But early in the year, you know, everywhere you go, nobody knows what to do. And at our rink, where you got to walk across the ice, you know, it's a little bit more difficult than like at Fairbanks, where the benches are right next to each other. So at Fairbanks, it's pretty easy to walk two steps and shake Dallas's hand. At our place at Tech, wherever you're across the ice at Northern, you know, it's a little bit more cumbersome and challenging. So the league just put out a policy. The coaches are only, the players should shake hands both nights. The coaches are only shaking hands on Saturday night. And then, you know, if you want it, and actually we're not supposed to go through the lines. The policy is coaches shake hands, get out of the way, and you'd be done with it. I was kind of against that. I thought the coaches should go line up and shake the players' hands. Certainly against Tech, with some of the relationships I had, I wanted to say hi to some of those guys. So no beef, no issue. Mel and I have a great relationship, but that's the league policy. It's supposed to be post-game Saturday night. And now again, you know, Mel started to come across Friday, and we kind of said, hey, we do it tomorrow. And so it's, I don't know, we need to clean it up as a league, but that's the league policy.
Okay, let's hope that explains all of that, because I heard about that after the games too.
Yeah.
We talked also about NLIs on this program, but there's been nothing put out on that yet, according to these fans, that there hasn't been a news release on NLIs as yet. I don't know whether there has or not.
I thought we had too.
I thought we did.
We'll double check and get that out. If we haven't got it out, we'll get that out. I thought we did, but we'll get on that, and so everybody has some links and some information to follow up on.
Okay, as a coach, how do you stay composed when you give up 4 goals in 7 minutes in the second game?
You know,
that's, keep your team composed.
Yeah. Well, and that's the thing. I think those have saw us, and I didn't think I did a great job with the refs on the weekend. And, you know, I think when the rivalry gets tensed up and big, important things are on the line, you want to make sure you expect your players to go on the ice and play with composure. So for me, I think it's important that our staff shows the same thing. If we expect our guys to go on the ice and play with discipline and composure, we better model that and show them for it. So, you know, for me, I think it's just part of how we try to do it. You know, and I liked it. We climbed back. It was, I think, a big part of that game Saturday was the timely of the response goals. We clawed back into it, made it a game, and then, you know, bang, they got the next one. And so every time we scored, they answered back, whether it's a big timely save. And I think our goaltenders had much chances on it, but you got to know the situation and, you know, be strong right after those big momentum goals. So for me, it's just, you know, I want our guys to model the way we are, and then we're confident in our team, and we never give up and we stay with it. So we want to make sure our players knew we felt the same way about it.
You know, I wanted to ask you too about, you do have a relationship with this Michigan Tech team. You recruited an awful lot of the players who are on that team right now, or worked with them at least as they were coming in. You coached them for a couple of years. You got to have, when you're watching them play, I was so impressed with some of their players, with how they play the game. I really like Chris Leibinger. I've always liked him. I think he's just a great player, and he's not that big. He's kind of like the kid at Ferris State who's a senior now, same way.
Yeah, well, Chris played for Anthony Palumbo, so, you know, a lot of everybody here knows Palumbo, and, you know, I'm not sure where Lake State was back then. I think they were involved a little bit. Ferris State was heavy on him, and he's a guy who came from Saginaw, double-A hockey,
right.
And he was kind of off the radar a little bit, and then made his way to Traverse City, and then Muskegon and Waterloo in the USHL, and as you said, you know, there's some guys you recruit that you're like, am I crazy? Like, I really like this kid. How come nobody else is talking to him, or what? How come nothing more is going on? Where is Ferris or whatever it is? And so Chris was a little bit one of those guys. He had some interest on it, but we loved his mobility. Very competitive kid. He's got a real nasty side and edge to his game, which you love. But he can go back and break pucks out just single-handedly. So we really liked him. And, you know, so he was kind of my guy as a Michigan kid. And I can't remember if Mel or Billy saw him, but we went out and saw him one other time. And our kind of the philosophy, if two guys go out, see him the same way and like him, then let's be confident in our evaluation, our opinion. And we've tried to do the same thing here. You know, we get a lot of chances where all three of us see a guy. And, you know, hey, if we make a mistake, we make a mistake. But if three of us see the kid and all see the same thing, then let's try to move and see if it's the right fit for both parties.
Well, it was interesting to watch them play. I thought they were good, and I thought we played right with them for the most part. Just those first few minutes on Saturday night made a big difference. We're going to take a break, our second of the show. We'll be back with more Laker Hockey Show tonight on ESPN 1400. Okay, we are back at the Antlers, third segment of the show tonight. Doug Holliva is going to join us in our final segment tonight. Damon Witten's coming back here in the third segment. We still have some questions from the fans here tonight. I want to make mention, too, I should have done this at the outset tonight, and I neglected to do it. I got a couple of things I should talk about. One of them is the passing of Bill Thorne, who died this morning here in Sault Ste. Marie, a radio icon. Yeah, he's my brother-in-law, but that's not why I'm talking about him. It's because he spent 60 years in the business making people, interviewing people, trying to make people feel better about what they do. And that Four Horsemen show he had for many, many years was very popular on Radio Sioux. And, you know, it's a sad day for us and the family, but Bill Thorne was an icon radio-wise in this community. And that's a sad one. His funeral will be on Thursday morning at Mulder Funeral Home. And the passing of Dan Doherty is another one. A great Laker supporter and a great professor at Lake Superior State University. I swear Dan Doherty worked right up until the end. He was still working 2 years ago, and didn't get a whole lot of retirement time in. And our condolences go out to both the families there. Damon, we've got more questions here. One of them's pretty challenging. I kind of like this. It looks like something maybe I would have asked 20 years ago. I've kind of mellowed on that sort of thing. But why did you choose to start Dayfield on Saturday? When Dayfield's on a hot streak, you refuse to use Kossoff. Why would you take Kossoff out when he's on a hot streak?
Well, I don't think it's, you know, refuse. I think when you look at it, you know, and we discuss everything as a staff and you know, you go through it all. But I think with the goalies, probably a little bit different. I think with most of our forwards and defensemen at this situation, we've got a pretty good feel of where they can be successful, where they fit in. You know, part of what you want to do with your younger players, and certainly a position that's so important as goaltending, is you want to put a kid in a situation to find success. And, you know, we weren't able to do that in some situations because we're such a young team with our forwards and D. But, you know, there has to be some kid gloves, ideally, if you can, with goaltenders. Now, Gordy didn't get that benefit last year because we had no experience on our roster. And, you know, we felt he was pretty clear-cut the number one goaltender. So we've tried to put Nick in situations where he can find success and to bring him along slowly. I think we have the luxury to do that because Gordy is so good. And, you know, and Gordy also has a track record of a year and a half now, where Nick has a track record of almost a half year. So he's done a good job. And we've said all along that we think he's certainly a very capable goaltender at this level. Obviously, he's got two shutouts already in just a few career starts. So it was good, you know. And then he got a chance to kind of run with it when Gordy struggled a little bit early, and he stumbled a little bit. And, you know, it's interesting talking to Nick because he was really down on himself. I can't remember what game it was. Maybe one of the Arizona States, I think. And, you know, he knew that that was a big opportunity that he lost. So he had a big chance to kind of, you know, be that guy. And had he taken advantage of it then, he would have gotten him many games in a row, or potentially many games in a row. So it is an interesting point there. And I think, you know, the other side of it, Gordy played so well. You know, realistically, Gordy probably didn't deserve to come out up in Fairbanks. Had he not got sick, he might not have come out. And so we wanted to get right back with him. Both guys have played at a high level. Gordy's numbers were just off the charts in November. I mean, just at a different level. So we feel really confident about both guys. And I think moving forward, we'll certainly look for lots of opportunities to get both guys opportunities to play.
Yeah, we did talk about their stats. Goaltending's not a problem with this team. I think scoring goals is the problem with this team. Offensive production is what we need to really pick up on. But 1.99 for goals against average for Kossoff and a .920 save percentage. Gordy's at 2.78 goals against and a .916 save percentage. Terry Barbeau's doing a pretty good job right there. Those two guys are both playing well. And Aaron Davis is a very capable backup. If we had to throw him in there, he could get it done too.
Yeah, I got three guys there. And I don't have the numbers. You know, you take Saturday night out, which you can't do, obviously. But if you take Saturday night out and you look just at November for Gordy, you know, off the charts. And,
yeah,
and Nick's numbers before Saturday were just a different level. So maybe it is bad coaching. We haven't used him more. And again, you know, Gordy's a big piece of that because he has played at such a high level. You know, it's a good problem to have. You know, two guys who can play. And again, I think moving forward, especially coming out of the break, you know, I think you look to get both guys a game at the tournament. And then, you know, we'll ride a hot hand. If somebody really gets hot, we'll try to harness that and have them keep us rolling.
Yeah, is the holiday tournament coming up, is that considered a part of the first half of the season or start of the second half, or is that nothing? Yeah. Is that just in between?
In between. No, I look at it second half, I guess. You know, we get a little break and 7 days off or 6 days off, whatever it is. So to me, it's the start of a second half. And, you know, certainly last year it was a big springboard for us to show us some of the things, the growth we could have. So we'll use it the same way this year, just to kind of start our second half and get back to that good structure that we need.
Okay, our last question here from the fans who are with us tonight at the Ant. So why do players call for the puck and then turn it over every time? Yeah. Well, I don't think they do it every time, but...
But too many times, many times.
And maybe it's bad passes from the D-men.
If you know the answer, let us know, because, you know, puck management is such an important part of the game. And, you know, obviously it's something we work on daily. And, you know, but it's a good question. I mean, you know, you think if somebody's calling for the puck and ready for the puck, that they'd have the awareness and the ability to not turn it over at that point. But some of it's on, you know, the individual players, that they got to make a better play or feel the pressure. Some of it certainly going to the teams you play. You know, when Ferris has a skating team, when Michigan Tech skates so well, they press you hard. I think like a team like BG and Bowling Green and Bemidji State are very tenacious on your hands. Like, I think it's, you know, I think a ref in some of those games, the way they play over the top of you and getting to your hands, you wish a ref would call one early to kind of back them off sometimes. But, you know, some of it goes to the opponent and some of it goes to the individual player.
Yeah, now you've been through the rebuild at Michigan Tech. You were part of all that as you bring these guys in who played against us this past weekend. Are things proceeding here at Lake Superior State about how you envisioned you wanted to do it when you came in?
You know, that's a great question, you know, and I think just Monday after the first half, I really haven't had a chance to think about it yet. You know, I'm so kind of sick and twisted. It's, you know, first of all, it's exhausting. Like, you know, this whole... You know, I'm not sure you really had a day off since August or, you know, however since we got going here. So it really just kind of hits you and like, oh my gosh, it's Christmas. And so really exhausted. But last night about 12:30, I'm clipping stuff for my stepdad because he's kind of putting our D-zone coverage into play. And he's like, what drills do you do? And Ned's got a bunch of film broken down from our practices. So about 12:30, 1 o'clock, I'm like, what am I doing? Like, you know, it's the first day off and I'm sitting here sending clips to my stepdad. So pretty sick and twisted that way. But, you know, we like where we're at. There's no question about it. I like the direction we're headed in. I think we still feel like there's areas we want to clean up and address, whether it's, you know, with our current team or as we continue to move forward and bring different pieces in. But, we're pleased. You know, we like where we're at. We're a much better product today. I think everybody kind of sees what we're trying to do and the style we're trying to play. And, again, we're not perfect in the way we want to play yet. We still want to continue, and that'll never change. We're always going to want to skate better and have more skill, and I don't care how good we are, we're going to continue to try to elevate through recruiting that way. So, I think there's some good things there. Are we where we're at? No, because we'd love to be undefeated in first place, and it's probably not realistic right now, but we'll never be there. I think if you're somewhere where we say, hey, we're where we want to be, you're probably in big trouble. So we'll continue to push and try to move forward.
Yeah, I think that was more aimed at for the second year of trying to rebuild something and build something out of the program. Is it about where you thought it would be? And I think you pretty much answered that. It is pretty much where we want it to be, although we want to be better.
Sure.
And the long-term goal is not to be where we are right now.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, there's some positive things, but yeah, we have a long, long way to go. And for year two, you got to be happy with some of the improvements, our team defense, our special teams play, really on both sides of it. I think with, another year or two of experience going back to Michigan Tech, you guys all saw Alex Batan this weekend, a guy who's actually playing with the Edmonton Oilers. Jajar Carl was part of that freshman class. So there's guys that we had there that were playing in the roles that some of our guys are now, and it bodes well in the future, as you see, but we want that right now. We don't have that much patience to us.
All right. Well, we're going to, one more question here for you, Damon, before we bring Doug in here for the last part of the show tonight. The injury report at this point, I think Eric Draplock's our only guy who's hurt at the point and can't play.
Yeah, you know what? There'll probably be some news out before too long. Got a couple other things going on there, so we'll give it some time. We got a couple areas we got to look at. We've got a doctor's appointment tomorrow for one of our guys who's played a lot of games. I was surprised. I saw the stat a couple places. Only three guys have played all 20 games. I've been surprised.
Yeah.
Couple suspensions, lots of a couple minor injuries, a couple major injuries, but I didn't realize it was that few. Guys have played all 20 games, so that surprised me. But we do have a doctor's appointment tomorrow where we'll find out a guy. There's a chance he's not going to be ready for Vermont, and then another guy that looks like he's going to have to go get some surgery done and would probably miss the rest of the season if that's the case. So we'll hold tight on that news. And Draplick, I haven't heard a whole lot of updates yet on Draplick either, so we're not sure if he'll be ready to play out in Vermont.
Now, when you go to Vermont, will you take 22 players like a regular road trip, or will everybody make that trip?
We'll take most guys. Again, some of the injured guys who are looking at some different rehab and medical procedures, they'll be a little bit different. If it's better for them to stay behind and get some treatment and things done, then we'll handle it that way. But it looks like most guys will be going.
Okay, very good. We're going to take a break, our final one of the show tonight. We'll be back. Doug Hullable will join us. Damon, thank you.
Thank you.
All right. I'm sure Damon's wishing everybody a Merry Christmas. Christmas coming up. We will not have a Laker hockey show the next couple of weeks. We'll be back on January the 4th with the show. And our Laker Hockey Talk show will be on this Wednesday morning and then not till January the 6th. So.
Yeah, so as you said, I want to just thank all our fans. It's been a great first half, and appreciate their support. And hopefully everybody has a very Merry Christmas. And we're looking forward to get back here in January and get it rolling. Thank you.
Very good. Damon Whitten joining us as usual. We'll be back right after this on ESPN 1400. Okay, our final segment of our last show before the Christmas holiday. Bill Crawford joined now by Doug Hullable, the assistant coach at Lake Superior State, one of the two assistant coaches. And Doug, last time we had you on was very early in the season. How are things going for you personally now? You didn't have your wife here yet, you didn't have a house then, and are things coming around for you pretty well?
Yeah, we got settled. My 2.5-year-old this year, so we'll see how long this actually lasts before he starts running around in circles or screaming. And but everything's going really good. My wife and son got up here shortly after we spoke, and they're loving it so far.
Now, the hockey end of it, it's everything you thought it'd be. Are you enjoying it? You seem to be pretty much a guy who gets right into everything.
I think that, we each have, a couple of things that we bring to the table, and certainly, trying to learn the recruiting side from the other two coaches as much as I can is, something that I think for my own personal development is going well, but I certainly have a lot to learn until to get caught up to those guys.
Yeah, and you got to learn who's who and what's what and all these places you go into. You're kind of the new guy. You're going in there meeting people a lot, although there are an awful lot of people probably in the college hockey world and in the recruiting end of things with juniors, et cetera, that you already know too.
Yeah. I think it's kind of been funny walking into some of these rinks and some of the showcases, just kind of unexpectedly how many people that you do know from my time in junior hockey or even the time in the American League, just how many guys know each other. And obviously hockey's a really small world. So I've been quite surprised actually, the amount of people that I do know in these events and certainly have a good understanding from the previous time in junior hockey of the landscape. But obviously until you actually get out there and hit the road, you don't understand how extensive it can be.
Yeah, and do you set sights on certain places, or do you go to showcases, or is it a little bit of everything where you try to go see as many teams as you can, or do you single in on one team where you heard there might be a guy who's pretty good that we might like, or how do you work that?
Yeah, fast hockey, watching games online is certainly a huge help to kind of understand the basis, or if you get a call on a player, or like I said, certainly with the network that Damon and Rich have, we certainly have a good amount of assets out there that can tip you off. And so you do your homework and try to watch some games online. And then you pick off some games from there. And obviously the huge showcases you want to have a presence at, and you want to get to know the landscape and get to know the player pool. But certainly those specific trips, you try to hone in on certain players.
Yeah, and you get to know assistant coaches from other programs, et cetera. I think Joe Sean told me when I interviewed him on Saturday night that he'd met you and he thought you're going to do a really good job. He was very impressed. And that's the kind of thing you want to do. You just get around and meet all these guys so that when you play against them, you know who they are.
Yeah, absolutely. I saw Joe in Penticton and then in Wenatchee 2 weeks ago. And we're kind of both on the same trail. And like you said, that happens throughout the year with a couple guys.
Okay, what are we doing right now? We talked to Rich about this a little bit. We're mostly looking at futures right now, trying to make, we got a plan for a couple years down the road. Is that basically what we're doing right now? We got everything set for next year at this point?
Yeah. I think you're always trying to look at ways to improve your team. So obviously if the right player comes along, you're always going to make room for that player that can impact the game. But for sure, as of right now, we're looking, like you said, towards the future. And it's amazing how much the game and how much recruiting has certainly evolved into more of the younger kids, the younger generation of players in that U16 age group. And so that's kind of what we're looking at right now.
Yeah, it is amazing. I think that all got started maybe four or five seasons ago. Everybody started, the big school started delving into all these young kids. Now everybody's into it. How about the other end of things now, working with our team? You work in a lot of practice situations, a lot of instruction going on. PK seems to be your area where Rich takes power play and everybody works together. It looks like a really good way to do things. I've been impressed with how each of you will get on the whiteboard and have something you want to do in practice, et cetera. How's it been for you? Have you enjoyed that?
Yeah, I think it's certainly healthy when you have a couple different voices, dispersing maybe the same message or a different message to the team. But like I said, it's certainly nice to kind of have that ownership and that say on the team. And we all work together in different elements and different aspects of the game. And so I don't think that there's any one particular box that one of us has. And it's kind of nice to bounce ideas off each other. Or when Rich is on the road, Damon and I will talk about the power play, and then vice versa when I'm on the road, Rich and Damon, bouncing ideas off each other for the PK. And obviously each team, each situation is completely different. So it's nice to have that. Sort of back and forth. So when one of us is gone, we're all on the same page.
Yeah, and this is a relatively young hockey team at Lake Superior State. If it's not young, it's certainly inexperienced. A lot of freshmen, a lot of sophomores. That's a challenge for the coaching staff as well, to deal with younger people and try to help mold them. And I think that's going well because this team's getting better in a hurry.
Yeah, and I think it's really just the consistency. And we talk a lot about habits, and building those habits into – into their game. And so when it does come time to game, come time to perform in a game, it's just instinct, it's muscle memory. And so, you know, that to me is the biggest part of practice, is building your habits. And, you know, eventually those are just going to automatically translate into the game, regardless of, you know, whether you mean to do it or don't. It's just what you've kind of trained your body to do.
Now, you've worked with pro hockey players the last few years. You were coaching in Bridgeport. That's a New York Islanders farm program. And one of the former Lakers is there, Kevin Churchman. Tell us a little bit about Kevin Churchman and how he developed as a pro player.
Yeah, no, and I've actually just talked to Brent Thompson, the head coach in Bridgeport, a week ago. And Churchy's doing, he's playing really well. I think when we spoke, he was their best defenseman for the previous two weekends. So he's certainly taken a huge step in terms of his development, and the staff up in Bridgeport in New York. Eric Bogunicki, you know, runs their D up there, and Eric Cairns is a development or director of player development, and certainly have done a great job with Kevin, as well as the number of New York Islander defensive prospects. But yeah, when I remember, forget when Churchy's first NHL training camp, I guess it was the beginning of last year, you know, didn't have a great training camp. You know, certainly that first full summer where everyone sort of starts out on the same page, you know, everyone's able to go to work on their bodies and come in on a level playing field is quite different than stepping in to the NHL, you know, when everyone's kind of played, you know, 60 games and you're stepping in fresh out of college, maybe played 35 games and your body's, you know, a little bit different shape. So certainly it took, I think, some time for him to adjust to the pace and decision making of the American League and the NHL. But I think, you know, once again, the habits kind of get dialed in, and you adjust to the pace, you adjust the decision-making process. You know, he's been obviously having a ton of success there, and their team's, you know, shows for it. I think they're top three in the conference right now. So
yeah, and a very good parent team there in the NHL. They've got a good team there with a lot of really good players. Tough to get into that lineup right now.
Yeah. I mean, when you're dealing with an NHL D-core, you know, Johnny Boychuk, Nick Leddy, Travis Hamonic, Calvin DeHaan as your top four, you know, it's tough to crack. And then, like I said, their defensive depth in Bridgeport, you're dealing with Ryan Pulock, who was a top 15 overall pick, Scotty Makefield, who's a third-year pro, Adam Pellich, who played World Juniors. I mean, it's a they've done an unbelievable job scouting and developing over the past, you know, 4 to 8 years. And to be part of that and where they are now, the NHL team seeing the fruits of that is, you know, pretty special. So,
well, we're out of time here tonight. Unfortunately, we could talk to Doug for another half hour here about some of the things going on. What are you looking for in the second half, Doug?
Just more consistency with the habits from our younger players, and certainly, you know, we're at 500 now at the Christmas Park in conference, and, you know, with a young team, you know, I think that going in, you look at where we are right now, and certainly we're not satisfied, and certainly it's not where we want to be, but with a young team playing 11 freshmen every night, to have our heads above water and have our some games in hand, we continue to build those habits, continue to build that consistency in practice. I think the skill and the conditioning, you know, is going to take over, and, you know, we're set up for some good success the second half of the year.
Yeah, it'll be a tough second half schedule wise. It's very difficult. We face some tough trips there. We got to go up to Anchorage again and out to Mankato, but these guys have played really well. I think they've done a good job at adapting, and you know, we're kind of surprised with how they went up to Alaska with no problem at all. Didn't bother them. They're all young guys.
Yeah.
All right. Well, Doug, thank you for joining us here tonight. We'll get you on again in the second half of this season two. We're out of time tonight here at the Antlers. Want to wish everybody a very Merry Christmas. We'll be back in the new year. We'll have a show for you on January the 4th. So join us down here at the Antlers. And so long until then, from the Laker Hockey Show on ESPN 1400.